Hey, so before we get started on this next episode, I just want to invite everyone listening to send us an email. You can send us an email at deartaiwanpodcast@gmail.com. If you have any questions you want to ask about Taiwan, want to suggest episode ideas, or just want to say hey, we'll even answer your questions in the next episode. 英文、中文都可以, Chinese or English are both okay. Very curious who's been listening so far. We look forward to hearing from you. Once again, that's deartaiwanpodcast@gmail.com. Welcome back, everyone, to the Dear Taiwan Podcast. My name is Teacher Joseph. On our episode today, we're going to be discussing and exploring seven tourism areas that Taiwan should consider developing or promoting, this time on the Dear Taiwan Podcast. So, while I did move to Taiwan to become a teacher, I also moved here for the adventure. I had the idea in my head that I wanted to see 10 countries in the region and also explore the entire island of Taiwan in my time here. Back when I moved here, I originally thought it would be maybe for 2 or 3 years before I decided to stay permanently. And I'm proud to say I did that. I visited 10 countries, and I also have visited almost every place across the entire country of Taiwan, save for Jinmen and Mazu Islands that are off the coast of China but controlled by the ROC government. Up and down the island, 5 scooter trips encircling the island, countless mountain areas, countless cities visited multiple times, trying to explore every township, every nook and cranny of the country, just to see what I could find. When I moved here, I had bought 1 or 2 tourist guidebooks, and I kind of read them religiously on the plane before arriving in the country. But what really came of all that? I knew of Taiwan as an urban place with a lot of sprawling night markets, with a lot of small alleys and cute neighborhoods. I knew of Taiwan as having a lot of amazing nature, but some of it was a bit more dangerous or inaccessible. I knew of Taiwan as having many cultural influences from the Qing Dynasty, the Japanese, the Aboriginals, into modern times with a little bit of Western and Southeast Asian influence as well. But what came of the quality of my trips? I enjoyed exploring. I enjoyed learning about the culture. I enjoyed so many of my trips here. But I can't say that finding information was always the easiest. And I can't say that every place I've actually been to in Taiwan, I would actually recommend for a traveler to visit themselves if they come here post-COVID. And that's because the tourism sector in Taiwan, to some extent, is underdeveloped. Not that it's underdeveloped by scale, but that it could be underdeveloped by scope. And what I mean by that is, if you go back to like the 1980s and 1990s, Taiwan was just emerging as a democracy out of a very strict, harsh, and unwelcoming authoritarian era, where only the most intrepid travelers or brave business people alike would consider setting up shop in the island. And when Taiwan democratized in the 90s, it opened to the world in a new way, not just for business, but also for cultural exchange, academic exchange, as well as more limited international participation due to the lack of being part of the UN. Nevertheless, when Taiwan began to really develop its tourism industry, it was in the 2000s, in the Ma Ying-jeou administration. Ma Ying-jeou was a president who was a lot more cozy towards China. He was from the KMT party, which is not necessarily pro-unification at all, but they're definitely friendlier towards China. And when the tourism industry really kind of started to take off, it was in the context of mainland Chinese tour groups coming and exploring the island on guided, regimented tours. This had a large effect on the way tourism in Taiwan began to take shape, because massive resort hotels were built, and the approach to tourism was go somewhere, see something, take some photos, eat something, and then go to the next place. These giant tour groups would cover different cultural areas, have different themes, but they weren't necessarily about exploration or experience. They were more so about introduction. And you can see the remnants of this era in Taiwan tourism in a lot of places in, let's say, in Kenting in the south or Taidong in the east, where there are hotels seemingly too large for the areas waiting for tour groups that are no longer coming. With the Xi Jinping era in China right now, the tour groups to Taiwan have dried up, especially as Taiwan has a more independence-leaning president. Not officially pro-independence, but, you know, independence-leaning president in Tsai Ing-wen. So Taiwan's in a bit of a pickle, having developed tourism in one context, but wanting to invite more international travelers for independent trips in the future post-COVID. This was highlighted recently in an article in the Taipei Times by Michael Turton titled, "Cover Your Eyes, the Tourism Bureau is at it again." I won't go too into depth in this article, but to sum it up, the Tourism Bureau in Taiwan launched a new tourism website platform, and from the perspective of a practical Western traveler, the site's not very inviting at all. It's a little bit hard net to navigate. And one quote in the article promotes Taiwan kind of with typical tourism cliches: dancing aboriginals, old women picking tea, pretty girl taking pictures, chopsticks picking up food, to quote the article. Thus, less experiential tourism. But this isn't to write off tourism opportunities in Taiwan at all. It's just to say that the approach is a little bit lacking. I really do feel that Taiwan has a lot to offer, and it's not currently offering a convenient, wholesome, or genuine tourism experience in a lot of places. Yes, I can go to Beipu and Hsinchu and see Hakka culture. Yes, I can go shopping in Taipei. Yes, I can go to the beaches of Fulong. Yes, I can go surfing in Ilan. Yes, I can go and see some historic sites in Tainan. But Taiwan really does have so much more to offer. While I could wax eloquently about all the hiking opportunities with high mountains over 3,000 meters with steep and challenging trails, I won't go so much into hiking here because that is a little bit more of a separate topic, which I could go deep into as I love hiking, but I want to focus more on leisure tourism opportunities, both for domestic travelers as well as international arrivals. Thus, 7 ideas Taiwan should explore to promote itself as a tourism destination, both to local people looking to explore somewhere new and to international arrivals. Number 1, waterfall tourism. I really don't know how the waterfall isn't a national symbol in Taiwan. There are so many waterfalls, and they are so, so beautiful. No, Taiwan doesn't really have something like Niagara Falls or Victoria Falls, because Taiwan's waterfalls are tall and thin. Taiwan has 5 massive mountain ranges running up and down the middle of the country, and thus, with heavy typhoon rains, with steep slopes, you have streams and rivers that swell up and create waterfalls, grow and shrink with the season, but stay beautiful nonetheless. Even right around Taipei City, if you simply just type in waterfall into Google Maps, Chinese or English, you'll see about 15 destinations you could get to on the north and the south part of the city in just a quick day trip. You don't have to hike to all the waterfalls. Some are set up for quick tourism already, but they're not really actively promoted. I'll say with confidence that I have never seen a waterfall so beautiful as the first time that I saw Shaolai Waterfall in Taoyuan after a typhoon a few days later. Taiwan also has the highest waterfall in all of East Asia, that being Jiaolong Waterfall in Jiayi, which we talked about in the Jiayi episode. Yeah, sure, technically it might not count because on occasion it does dry up, but hey, if you go, you're still going to see a waterfall. Maybe you want to hike out to it, do some river tracing. Of course, check the weather conditions before you go. Maybe you just want to fly a drone. Maybe you want to be like an Instagrammer, take pictures of yourself at 100 plus waterfalls, which you can totally do in Taiwan. Why isn't there a burgeoning art scene capturing Taiwan's natural beauty with waterfalls as the main focus? Sure, there's some river tracers and canyoning activities that you could join, but they're more technical specialists. Taiwan has Baiyue, which means 100 peaks. Why doesn't Taiwan also have Baibu, or the 100 most beautiful waterfalls? Because I could easily go to Xiaofei's website, or Google Maps and compile my own list. Taiwan really should explore the waterfall as a national symbol and a way to promote tourism. Maybe it's not as experiential outside of the context of hiking to one, but with temples cut into cliffs behind Yinhe Waterfall 20 minutes away from Shindian MRT station just outside of Taipei City, with the highest waterfall in all of East Asia, with waterfalls that you can see cut into the mountainside as you're standing in Hualien City looking up at the back central mountain ranges, as if they're floating in mid-air, with waterfalls with steep cave drops like San Diaoling up in Reifang District in New Taipei City, where you can literally hike behind it as a jet of water comes down mid-air and you're encapsulated in a canyon. With four waterfalls stacked on top of each other, like the Flying Dragon Canyon Waterfall in Pingdong, or even just with waterfalls by the side of the road, like that of Ulai in the outskirts of Taipei as well. You could easily hop from waterfall to waterfall, whether for an artistic pursuit, an active pursuit, or just to be amazed by the beauty. Waterfall tourism really should become more developed in Taiwan. Number 2, barbecue tourism. Korean barbecue has taken the world by storm. Japanese barbecue techniques are widely used by chefs exploring different kinds of cuisine across the world. As an American, the American barbecue is the clear champion, I'm obliged to say that. But Taiwanese barbecue gets the short end of the stick. Because amongst the countries influenced by Chinese culture, China, Singapore, Malaysia, Taiwan, Taiwan is the only country to have a barbecue as a main fixture of the mid-autumn festival holiday. And this was actually due to an early ad campaign by a barbecue sauce, where they wanted people to come out and have a barbecue underneath the full moon as the weather kind of got cooler. It's been really successful. And barbecue is synonymous in most Taiwanese minds with the holiday. Now, Taiwanese barbecue technique is much different. It's quite common to see people using single-use or disposable grills low to the ground outside of their houses, kind of on the edge of the street. But there's also park barbecues as well. It's similar in technique to Japanese barbecue, as you're cooking quickly and often cooking and eating at the same time. But the ingredients can often be a little bit different. Some are more processed than others. And the sauces, again, are somewhat Japanese influenced, but there's a lot of Taiwanese influence as well. You can be barbecuing ingredients as thinly sliced pork and beef, even some organ meat like chicken hearts on skewers, some fish cakes, a lot of mushrooms, even barbecue clams. And while Taiwan doesn't do a lot of ground meat, they do a lot of pre-marinated sliced meat as well. Never mind the fact that aboriginals in Taiwan have some strong barbecue traditions as well. You can go down south to Wutai Township in Pingdong and see how the Rukai natives make their own variety of sausage with taro, dried fish, and pork fat. You can see how some of different aboriginal tribes' barbecue techniques involve hanging metal grates over wood pit fires, or possibly stacking up slate rocks and roasting sweet potatoes underneath. Oftentimes, Taiwanese will cut open wide sections of woody bamboo and actually cook a soup over the barbecue. And while the flavor palette and the cuisine might not be as developed, the culture surrounding it, that it being tied to a holiday, the same way the American barbecue is somewhat tied to the 4th of July, I think that Taiwan really should promote Taiwanese barbecue both as an experience and as a cuisine to different countries and cultures around Asia. There should be more restaurants offering creative ways to introduce Taiwanese barbecue to the masses, be them Taiwanese domestic tourists or international arrivals. And I would love to see Taiwanese barbecue take the place in the spectrum of world cuisine up nearby Korean barbecue and Japanese barbecue, as they do have their own culture surrounding it, they do have their own flavor palettes, with a dash of Aboriginal influence mixed in there. It's absolutely delicious. Number 3, fruit tourism. Okay, hear me out first. This is not going to draw in international visitors, but I'm quite surprised that this is not more of a common thing. In America, in temperate areas of the country, it is quite a common habit to go apple picking in the fall, blueberry, strawberry, or raspberry picking in the summer, and it's kind of a wholesome family activity to do. And there's unfortunately less of that in Taiwan, except for the temperate crops that are grown in the country in the few places you can. Strawberry picking is quite popular in Miaoli, but the season is in January. And if you go up to the high mountain areas of Lishan, which is on the border of Taichung and Shepa National Park, you can have some fruit orchards that will offer apple and Asian pear and plum picking as well. But where does that leave the fruit that are kind of more known as being Taiwanese? Because Taiwan is a fruit powerhouse, don't forget. Taiwan grows large amounts and countless varieties of mangoes, pineapple, dragon fruit, lychees, sugar apple, kumquats. The list goes on. I remember my friend Matt trying to look up a place to go and pick yangmei, or what can be translated as bayberries. And while there are bayberry farms in the country, we couldn't find a place at all. I don't know why Taiwanese farms don't go for an experience for the family with the fruit that the country is known for. I would absolutely love to go to a pick-your-own lychee farm, or a pick-your-own longan farm, a pick-your-own tumanguo farm, even a pick-your-own danhuanguo or canastel farm, though canastel is kind of from Central America. It was brought over and is now farmed in Tainan. Taiwan has tons of fruit that are hard to find in the West, hard to find fresh at least, and are widely consumed and not really given much thought in the country. How long has it been since you had a fresh kumquat, a fresh passion fruit, fresh bajiao banana, which is a variety not commonly eaten in America? You can keep going down the list. If you go to any fruit market in the country, especially the larger ones, there's varieties of fruit that I'll bet you haven't actually tried. And I think if Taiwan opens up some pick-your-own lychee farms, pick-your-own loquat farms, pick-your-own kumquat farms, pick-your-own mango farms, and especially pick-your-own custard apple farms, they'd actually do quite well. Because I definitely want to bring my daughter one day down south to pick wax apples, pineapples, whatever fruit is in season. Just not watermelon, because watermelon in Taiwan can grow larger than a car tire. Watermelons here are giant. No one's gonna pick those. But maybe some papayas. Number 4, butterfly tourism. Growing up in small town Massachusetts, right around the corner from my high school was Magic Wings, this kind of walk-in butterfly greenhouse and zoo. It was a tourist draw as it was right off the highway, and this small organization imported butterflies, for better or for worse, from all over the world. And you could go into this greenhouse and it was almost magical as a kid, having butterflies of countless different colors come over, land in flowers by you, and if you're lucky, land on your head. But where I'm from in Massachusetts, there's not a lot of native butterfly species aside from the very common monarch butterfly. Taiwan, on the other hand, is home to over 370 butterfly species, with over 50 only being found in the country. As Taiwan is sometimes talked about as the butterfly kingdom in international media and tourist guidebooks, where's the interactive walk-in butterfly greenhouse? Obviously, you couldn't bring every kind of butterfly to a place like this, but if it's been done in a small town in Massachusetts, which doesn't get tropical weather ever, it definitely can be done in the country. I'm really surprised it's not. While I've seen some places in Yunlin County and the mountains of Kaohsiung City advertised as like butterfly paths for people to get up in the morning and be surrounded, immersed in countless numbers of butterflies, where's the butterfly zoo, for lack of a better term? I'm just not so sure why this hasn't been tried yet. Maybe there are some ecological concerns, but again, if it's been done far away in the US, it can definitely work and be done here. Now, you can definitely still see butterflies on any trip to Taiwan. Just go on a hike up Yangming Mountain in nearby Taipei in the spring or in the summer. Taiwan's many, many butterfly species can be as much of a national symbol as the Taiwan black bear, in my opinion. And I'd love to see some place open up like Magic Wings in Deerfield, Massachusetts, and it would definitely draw in a lot of tourism. We might even have to limit it. Number 5, medical tourism. This is an area which actually has been somewhat developed in Taiwan, but it's a little bit of a best-kept secret, at least according to some medical tourism blogs which I've read. I luckily haven't had to engage in this field or recommend it to anybody, but nevertheless, Taiwan does have some world-class hospitals, some medical breakthroughs and milestones have happened in the country, whether it's with surgeries in the 60s and 70s, or with vaccine development in the 90s. And Taiwan's hospitals are quite affordable, even without the national health insurance, which is another topic I have to praise wildly in the future. Even without national health insurance, if you're paying full price, the prices are set by the government largely, so even the most complex procedures are often quite affordable. And it's a widely known fact in Taiwan's medical community that hospitals are sometimes feeling strapped for cash. Because the National Health Insurance acts to benefit and assist every citizen and resident, sometimes hospitals often kind of don't have as much cash coming in as they wish they should, which they could then use to innovate or make medical breakthroughs with. That's why you see a lot of hospitals engaging in kind of ancillary activities, such as having stores on site, allowing patients to pay for more plush accommodations, etc., etc. And if the medical tourism field was developed more so as it is in places like Thailand or India or Malaysia, I think that this could bring a strong economic benefit to Taiwan. It is an area of tourism Taiwan could easily develop if they could market it away from just patients that might come from mainland China. However, there is an electoral bent to why this hasn't been developed or marketed to a certain extent. The public don't necessarily understand how people who come to Taiwan to seek medical care have to pay out of pocket and aren't covered by medical insurance, that they will actually benefit the hospitals by bringing in a larger cash flow, still paltry in comparison to some Western costs. And they're not taking up doctors' time, as is often talked about in the news when this issue is brought up. So it will take some clever marketing to convince the public that medical tourism is actually good for the country as a whole. It could actually benefit hospitals as a whole, and it's not taking anyone's place in the hospital. It could see Taiwan differentiating itself further and showing just how modern and developed the country truly is. So I think medical tourism is an area that should be explored and marketed to the West, albeit a little bit more carefully. Never mind the fact that not every hospital is government-run. In fact, only about half are. There are plenty of private hospitals and clinics in Taiwan that could do marketing for medical tourism on their own. Number 6, scooter tourism. Taiwan is a country of just about 24 million people, and in the country there are 16 million registered scooters. Yes, driving a scooter can sometimes be dangerous. Yes, not everybody coming in from other countries would know how to do it, know Taiwan's laws, or even feel comfortable driving on the road here, but I don't understand why the scooter isn't kind of thought of as a national symbol in Taiwan, just given how many people rely on scooters to get around, how prevalent the huandao, or driving around Taiwan as a trip, culture can be in some circles in Taiwan, and even how Taiwanese manufactured scooters are sold as far away as Europe. I legit saw a Kymco or Guangyang brand scooter parked on the street in Germany. How is Kymco not a national symbol of Taiwan, kind of to the extent that something like Ford or GM is in America? How is the scooter not thought of as an image of the country, the way a big car is for America, at least back in America's kind of car heyday? Scooters are insanely convenient, fun to drive, thrilling for a visitor, and far more practical for any kind of short trips than a car would be. Now, I'm not saying everybody who might come to Taiwan or every Taiwanese should make a Huandao vacation a life goal. But honestly, yes, I am. Huandao trips are amazing, and you can drive a scooter around the entire island in about a week, including stopping at many places. If you want to drive like a maniac and drive 12 hours a day, you can circle the island in 3 days, but don't do that. A scooter is the best way to get to some of Taiwan's most remote places, highest mountains, isolated beaches, and have some of the most convenient travel experiences that Taiwan or even the world could offer. And the fact that Taiwan doesn't market itself with a scooter as kind of, again, like a little bit of a national symbol or cultural icon, especially when roads are getting so clogged with cars, kind of confuses me. Yes, there's safety concerns, but those can be mitigated by more education and training. Sure, a scooter might be a symbol kind of the lower middle class, but the reality is it's still widely used as a means of transport by most of the population day to day. And sure, one of the worst parts of driving a scooter is getting stuck in a rainstorm at 3 p.m. on a humid June day as a downpour starts like some spirit in the sky is snapping their fingers. But scooter culture in Taiwan is truly unique to the island, somewhat well-regulated, safer than it was in the past, and far more of a defining part of the Taiwan's identity and experiences than people might realize if they're living here day to day. So I think that scooter tourism, or simply scooters being advertised as a symbol of Taiwan, should be considered and developed. I have 2 scooters right now. I love driving my scooter everywhere, and driving a car is kind of a pain. Oh, also, have there been any movies made of like a group of recent high school graduates doing an amazing Huandao scooter trip? If so, there totally should be. Scooters should take more precedent in Taiwan's media landscape as well. And finally, number 7. Maybe you don't agree that marketing Taiwan in terms of fruit, butterflies, or scooters is all that interesting to a Western international traveler, and I totally agree. Maybe you don't think that medical tourism really is a way to kind of market the country to get more exposure and only appeals to a select group of people. I also totally agree to that. If you disagree that waterfalls and barbecue are amazing, well, then I guess we're not going to be good friends. However, I think that this final way that Taiwan should market itself to the world and can develop tourism around it is widely agreed upon, and that being democracy tourism. This is more of the museum side of tourism, the information side, but Taiwan's democracy story is quite unique and so fast. The fact that there's not a monument under construction or in the works to former President Lee Teng-hui, who passed away recently, is also kind of baffling. There's still a monument to Chiang Kai-shek, who was a controversial, murderous, yet economically productive dictator who ruled Taiwan all the way until the mid-1970s. Taiwan's democracy story involves getting out of this cycle of authoritarianism quite quickly, with a locally born steering away from the is party's mission, allowing separate parties to be included in elections, not just as a front, truly allowing them. Him being reelected in the first real election, purely based off the fact of how transparent he was in the democratization efforts of the country. And Taiwan now having some of the freest and fairest elections in all of Asia, scoring higher on the democracy index than the US even, and all of this happening in about 20 years. So Taiwan's democracy transition and tradition is both short and amazing. But the sheer fact that Taiwan overcame a brutal authoritarian past up until the 1970s, had quite a quick transition to democracy, immediately had a peaceful transfer of power after becoming a democracy, has an insanely high voter turnout rate at over 70% most elections, has higher election transparency than the US, has higher journalistic freedoms than the US, This story needs to be more widely told, all up against a menacing authoritarian power in mainland China. And the fact that there's not really a giant democracy museum somewhere in the country, or Taiwan doesn't market itself with democracy heavily present as themes in media, I really hope that this field is going to be developed a lot in the coming years. Another part of the reason why I chose to come to Taiwan really was the fact that it is a safe, it is a fair, it is a vibrant democracy. Nothing against places like Vietnam or Malaysia, but if you're to move to some place for quite a long time, it might behoove you after a while to realize that not every citizen is treated fairly, depending on their political beliefs. And Taiwan, as a beacon of democracy and productive democracy in East Asia, really stands out and really should stand out more. And especially around election time, it can be so fun seeing all these insane amounts of posters, public events, rallies, and campaigning, different from we have in the West, very different from other countries in East Asia. A lot of fun, even to passively observe as a foreign resident, just how amped up people get, yet how people are still very much bound together by their Taiwanese identity, despite political and different political differences on certain issues. Taiwanese very much love their country, whether they're more KMT-leaning and think of Taiwan as more of the Republic of China government, or whether they're a little bit more pro-independence, DPP or Pan-Green-leaning, thinking of independence as a far-off target. People do really appreciate their country for what it is, and Taiwan's democratic process, again, needs to be told to a wider international global audience. I don't know how one can really characterize the concept of democracy tourism, but I hope it gets developed in whatever possible. In the same way, Boston has the Freedom Trail downtown, where you can walk through history and learn about the development of the independence movement. Taipei and other cities in Taiwan should have the Democracy Trail to learn about the efforts on behalf of regular people through the KMT era and up to the 1970s, even back to the early rebellions against the Qing Dynasty authority in the south part of the country in the 1800s. Taiwan's democracy story is layered, complex, and interesting. So, there we go. That's 7 tourism areas that Taiwan should consider exploring. Now, I know not a lot of them are actually experiential tourism, but I really do think that waterfalls, barbecue, butterflies, fruit, medical tourism, scooters, and democracy can kind of all act as symbols or images that represent Taiwan and the Taiwanese experience to an international audience or a Western traveler. Because who wouldn't want to ride a scooter down some fruit orchard roads, have a barbecue underneath a waterfall as butterflies fly past, and learn about Taiwan's unique democratic history? And I hope that despite my rambling, you may have come away from this episode seeing Taiwan as more of just a place that manufactures computers and has night markets. And for more experiential tourism, there's a lot of foreign YouTubers and Taiwanese YouTubers that kind of post hiking, kayaking, canyoning, river tracing, and scuba diving videos and content on YouTube and Instagram. Taiwan really does have quite a lot to offer to the international traveler. And when international travel opens up post-COVID, I hope that anyone listening from outside the country really would consider visiting Taiwan. This is an amazing place, and I'm so happy and lucky to be able to call Taiwan my home. Thanks again for listening to the Dear Taiwan podcast. Again, we now have our email address, so if you have any comments, questions, or disagreements on the 7 areas we've talked about today, please feel free to let me know, and we might even read your comments, emails, or questions on the next episode. Thanks again so much for listening. This has been Teacher Joseph, and thank you so much, Taiwan. Pardon my cat in the background.